So again, one more time, returning to the TMQF document, there are a number of statements acknowledging the importance of collaborative, the synergy of collaborative research and bringing disciplines together. And there's a specific indication that experts from the field of biostatistics and bioinformatics should be involved at the planning stage for particular projects rather than being consulted after the project is already underway. We propose institutional change in culture across the entire spectrum of research, one that will result in biostatistical expertise being recognized as a key component of all elements of translational research. Members of biostat and bioinformatics must be identified as collaborators in the research areas. I'm reading into this that the distinction between what some of us might call service support and assistance versus true collaboration. One of the areas that we wanted to discuss are really issues specific to Mike West's involvement among the many people that we were hoping to see. I understand he couldn't be here today. So we had a couple questions, and some of you may be able to provide us some insights since he's not here to specifically do so. Based on the historical account provided by Duke, we understand that he and members of his group collaborated extensively in the early years of this process that we've been talking about with the Nevins group in the development of gene expression signatures of clinical outcome and pathway activation. And some of those same modeling strategies were then used to develop the chemosensitivity predictors. So the questions that we had are, when these algorithms were developed by the West group and were being adopted or adapted for use in clinical trials and in research papers, did the West group remain integrally involved in the process, assuring that methods were stable enough for use in the trials and that these methods were being properly implemented? Was there an ongoing collaboration, as you're referring to here, not just in developing these methods, but ensuring their proper implementation? And I might as well just ask both parts. The second part of the question is, when the questions then began to emerge about multiple predictors based on the methodology that I assume in part was methodology that he had collaborated in development, did that group take an active role then in addressing those concerns, or did they simply provide the research-grade computer code and have no further involvement in the questions? Were they partners in research for the entirety of the project, or did they view their role to submit the code and then you were on your own?
So who can address that?
Bill can probably.
All right, Jeff, do you have experience before Bill came on?
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is that that Mike West's involvement was fairly significant in the early discovery components of this. Through the at least the discovery of the initial predictors, to my knowledge, I don't know that he was involved in any of the validation studies. And as we were contemplating clinical trials, it was clear that this was not an interest of his. That is, that he was more interested in more of the fundamental methodology and development of statistical methods versus their implementation. And this is largely what drove us to recruit Bill to help us think about the problem of how do we take a method such as this and the kinds of data sets we're talking about and have them reproducibly used in the context of a clinical trial scenario.
Jeff, can I ask you a question about Wes? Can you say anything more about why he sort of became uninvolved, like around in 2006 for the Nature Medicine paper and stuff? And it was sort of a noted absence when this happened. Was this a reflection of interest in basic biology, or was there some difference with the group, or did the group think they could do stuff on their own, and are there any lessons about roles of statisticians and design people and so forth?
So in an ideal situation, I think it would, from my perspective, having the quantitative science people involved from the very initiation of a project and carrying that through the various translational steps would be ideal. It's just like, I don't think the quantitative science aspects of this are any different than the basic biologist's perspective. If you don't have them actively participating in many of the design constructs, you're losing some significant intellectual input that could actually be the difference between success and failure. It's somewhat mysterious to me as to what happened in terms of the absence of Dr. West from the latter stages, but as it was explained to me and as I indicated, it was primarily motivated by his interest or lack of interest in not being involved in the clinical trials aspect of this.
Yet he was a co-author on a number of the publications that occurred during those early years, and my understanding would have been fairly integral in the work with Dr. Nevins, I assume, in the training of Dr. Potty. As Dr. Potty came in, he would have been one of the more senior members of the research team in that time period.
When I first came to Duke, it was at the time also that Joe Nevins and Mike West received an ICPP grant from the NIH, and a lot of the methodology here was, and a lot of the early science was really done in the context of that particular project. And I believe, although I can't say for sure, that Dr. Potty was a part of those teams as part of his training.
So I'd asked a couple specific questions, and my sense about them is I certainly haven't heard a yes to those questions, that he in fact was involved in what you're defining to be a true collaborator and was actively involved in helping to address the concerns that had been raised externally about the reliability of a number of predictors and worked with the team to try to address the scientific integrity of how they were being applied.
Go ahead. I would welcome your giving Mike a call and having a discussion with him. It's best we can tell from the brief conversations we've been able to have with him. His view of it is, it's not so much biology he's interested in, it's really math. I mean, he is a mathematician, and he was interested in the theory of developing signatures, and he did his work, and he had no interest in the practical application. That's what he told me, and I think he's told several other people the same thing. He says it was not that he had a falling out with Joe Nevins or any thing terrible, but the end result was that between West and Barry, you have a gap where, as best I can tell, the main analyst was Anil Potty. You had no formal training in quantitative science.
Yeah, I mean, I can just make the factual statement that when I joined Duke in April of 2007, shortly before the initiation of the trials, the sole collaborators I worked with and had access to in terms of understanding the signatures and the algorithms were the members of the Potty and Nevins lab. I did not have any interaction with Mike West. I was not directed to his group. So for that reason, I relied on the code and the data that I had access to in order to understand the research.
So at least the sense I'm getting is, if I'm reading hopefully correctly what it is that you're advocating in the TMQF document about the importance of collaboration, you're talking about something richer than someone being a technician and providing code and then stepping aside. You're talking about the importance of bringing disciplines together in a truly interactive, synergistic way true collaborators in research.
Sally, why don't you comment on this, and then I have a couple of more comments I'd like to make.
Yeah, I mean, I'll comment on it in the clinical research realm and then also a little bit in the basic science realm. So at the level of the SBRs and the design of clinical protocols, we're now mandating that there is statistical expertise embedded within each of the SBRs. And, you know, it's all tied up also in financial models of the SBRs, which is we're mandating that they take money from the residuals from clinical trials, put them into hub accounts, and pay for things like statistical support up front. And whether that be in a service model or in a collaborative model, it's going to be something on which the directors of the SBR are judged by. So they're embracing that as well, I think, because they also want their investigators to avoid getting into trouble. They want them to know what they're doing. Now, In the basic science realm and in the sort of translational space, it becomes a little bit more complicated, and we're talking now about several different models. One is a sort of consultation service where if you have a time-limited biostatistical question or bioinformatics question, there will be people that you can consult with, and that may even be master's level biostatisticians and bioinformaticists. As you get into more complicated large data set analysis, et cetera, particularly for things that are destined for application in the clinic, we're still in conversation about that, but it's very likely that we're going to also that mandate some evidence of direct involvement of a sort of card-carrying biostatistician or bioinformaticist in the development of models if it is going to eventually be applied in the clinic.
So a couple more things about that. I mean, the environment that I grew up in was fundamentally started as a biostatistician-clinician interaction. The part I hadn't appreciated as much that Sal has referred to several times is we've invested in the DCRI almost as much in informatics as we have in biostatistics. They overlap, but they're not the same in terms of the discipline. And so the richness of the environment, I think if you're going to be doing work that depends on quantitative analysis, depends on collecting the right data, having a good data system, having people who understand those things, and having good analysis and study design, and then the right analysis done with the data system, that requires a team that's at least a three-legged stool with someone interested in the topic area, and then informatics and biostatistical expertise. And the other, and as Sally said, this in the clinical research arena is being built in. We have a nice debate, as we do about a lot of things going on, about whether basic science is really harder or more complicated. I don't really think it is, but she does. I think, understanding the quantitative issues, if you're going to be analyzing data, is just as important in one area as the other. And I admit I could be wrong about this. But certainly the model is easier now to adapt in the clinical arena because of the structure that we have in place. So to be very specific, there will be a PhD, some component of FTE, and we're working on what component for each of these 15 SBR units. And then there will be master's or bachelor's level support to do the routine stuff, but the intellectual involvement will be at the PhD level. And, there's a vigorous set of discussions about what's the right level, because if you got 4,800 protocols, you can't have, obviously full involvement of a PhD biostatistician in every element of every protocol. You probably wouldn't want that. We've worked that out in the multi-center arena, as you know, in a coordinating center model where you have some ratio of PhDs to others, and we're trying to work that out for site-based research now. In the area of informatics, the more basic you get, I think the higher level you need. But we're developing a discipline on the clinical side that's not at the PhD level, but which are people who understand fundamental clinical data, so that people don't finish a study and then realize they didn't collect the things they needed to get an answer to the question that they had, as simple as that may sound. And then the final thing to bring up is we've developed a questionnaire, a self-assessment tool that we've been through, I think, 24 iterations of now, including sending it to people all over the country. And every single person that's looked at it has sent back substantive comments. One of the hardest areas being, what about quantitative people who are not biostatisticians but do quantitative analysis? And helping them understand what they need. And how do you factor that?
Let me focus my question. Okay. At the beginning of the day today, we talked about several levels of oversight. And we said, where should this begin? We gave a whole list of different levels of oversight, some institution, some external institution. And you said it starts with the PI. And when I gave my summary of what I had understood you had written about and what we had independently developed, we started with the PI too. Although we wrote PI and co-authors, including quantitative experts. There's, and I don't know if I'm crediting you with something, but I was very interested in the recognition in the TMQF document that what you're talking about, there were some use of the words service and support here. And that's very different in my sense from what I thought you were writing about, which is we want people involved at the beginning. We want them involved in the development of the question, in the development of the science. Then we want them integrated throughout the process in the quality of the conduct of the research as collaborators, not as SSA. So is someone coming in and generating a sample size calculation going back to their office, or somebody coming in and providing research grade computer code, what you're talking about?
No, we're talking about a collaborative model.
Okay, where I didn't misinterpret what you were saying.
But this is a huge culture change. This is not a trivial culture change for your typical investigator, and particularly for your basic science, more basic science-oriented investigator. I mean, I still have resonance of very famous people saying, if you need a statistical analysis, then it can't be a clear answer.
And, of course, if that is what happens, not only do you lose the synergy, you lose part of this oversight. So if there is something that goes awry, intentionally or unintentionally, by a PI, and you have SSA, you've lost that added check to identifying this at an earlier point in time.
Right. Let me clarify something, because when I was referring to service, what I was referring to was the fact that we have a full spectrum of activity, i.e., in any of the realm you're talking about, these are collaborative models. I was talking about the basic science lab wants to know if, you know, they should do 5 mice or 10 mice in a limited experiment where there's, you know, there has to be something to serve those people, was my point. But this is very different.
It's still dangerous to use that term.
Okay, sorry.
Well, I think that as professional statisticians, we've always struggled with the issue of, are we treated as statistical scientists or statistical clerks?
Sure.
And I think, of course, we all do service with a little S, but our goal is to be clever. But there's another tension, which I see and feel all the time, and I'm guessing you've encountered, where a laboratory or a unit wants to hire their statistician. So an issue here is, as I've told, I sort of view this, I belong to a union house called Statistics or Biostatistics, but I work on a construction site called a cancer center or a CTSA or a SCORP, whatever. So there's this balance in my life between belonging to my union and doing things according to the union best principles, but also being responsible to the project. So I hear at our place and other places I go to about, you know, labs wanting to have the statistician down the hall so in 2 minutes they can run down and ask the question versus having some central group. Now, there are problems with both models. So as you're rolling out this culture change, how are you addressing this tension between having the statistician down the hall versus having them part of a department, which you now have with a leader recently? So how are you dealing with that?
Well, you know, we have resisted, not always successfully, but we've tried very hard to resist the notion of individual departments, for instance, hiring their statistician, particularly PhD-level statisticians. The model we're favoring, and, you know, it's part of the cultural evolution, is to really have the Department of Biostatistics and Bioinformatics be the intellectual home of PhD biostatisticians and bioinformaticists. But have them essentially specialize, you know, intellectually they will be kind of embedded in some of the units that they're working with most frequently. But, you know, in essence, they'll have two homes. But I think both for sort of mentoring, professional development, for people who are interested in developing their own lines of methodological research, et cetera, it's important for them to have the departmental home of like-minded colleagues in the bioinformatics and biostatistics department. Yet, you know, we find time and again, if the individual intellectual areas or therapeutic areas don't have an individual or a couple individuals that they work with closely, that they develop relationships with, it doesn't work either. So, in essence, those folks have to have two homes. And, you know, whether they're physically located with the peripheral units, we have not yet really delved into. But in terms of their appointments, et cetera, it's clear that they're being appointed in the B&B department, and their collaborations are not part of their academic appointment.
I mean, this is certainly structurally a really key issue, and there's a fine line, there's a balance. Mm-hmm. You want the biostatisticians that are involved to be collaborators with the clinical and lab scientists with whom they're working. At the same time, particularly for more junior faculty members, mm-hmm. you want them to have a sense of independence, exactly. that they're academically independent, mm-hmm. That they have the support of colleagues in their discipline, mm-hmm. And that when there become issues of conflict, and there will be in science, mm-hmm. that they sense that they can stand forward for the principles and also have good access to people in their discipline to bounce the ideas. Is my perception here appropriate or not? Mm-hmm. So, specifically, Bill would be the obvious person here, in your administrative structures here, how much of your percent funding was coming from the Patty Nevins project, and how much were you anchored in their home versus anchored in an independent biostatistics department where, in essence, you were collaborating with them, but you felt you had the support of the independent colleagues in your discipline?
Let me speak directly about that, using myself as a case example. I think the intent was very close to what you just said in terms of being independent collaborators. So I joined Duke in 2007. I am a non-tenure track assistant professor. My position was created, and I worked directly with various people in terms of what my appointment would comprise, one being Steve George, who was at that point transitioning the department leadership over to Liz DeLong, now our current chair, and then also Joan Evans and Jeff and members of the IGSP, that my effort was going to be divided between working with IGSP in terms of establishment of the CGSU, and then also working with, I am also a faculty member of what was CALGB is now the Alliance, so the Cooperative Group Program, and was also working with the Cancer Center, now Cancer Institute, through what we had at the time in terms of a breast spore. So I was trying to anchor myself, I would say, in that framework. And my IGSP involvement was never meant to be a majority of my time. It was to be split some balance of a third, a third, a third, or 50, 25, 25 in those entities. You know, what I found...
Go ahead.
You know, what I found early on, and so early on, I tried to have a footprint, I would say, both in IGSP and in my department. Our department was going through a transformation at that point in terms of, really, prior to 2007, almost all of the faculty members of B&B were embedded in the units that they worked with. It was at the time that I joined that we were actually, as a department, really trying to centralize within the medical center space as a physical department. And so I initially started with a footprint in IGSP and in B&B, and actually within the first year, it was much easier to get exactly the level of support that you just mentioned to have my primary place be within the department. And so I did make that transformation.
So in that first year, in that second year, what percent of your funding came from the Patty Nevins-related research?
50%.
And the other 50% was what?
25% CALGB, 25% breast spore.
And so,
because I'm a non-tenure track appointment, I was almost entirely soft money. I was funded by grants, large grants, where I was not the PI.
And what was your last 25 again? What was it?
It was the breast spore program, which okay. Dr. Kim Lyerly was the PI of at the time.
Okay. So I guess the last set of questions that I'd ask are pure speculation on my part, but just trying to sense the reality. What motivates this is that my understanding is that you essentially, after June 29, 2010, did engage in an effort to ascertain the validity of the data and the omics predictors based on the data. And it would seem like that was a really important thing to do. And I would have thought it would have been done earlier in time. So at least what I think about then is you've got a bright, young, technically competent, promising biostatistician who's on board. Right. And predominantly, however, affiliated with a cohort where there have been now, we understand, some significant irregularities in the scientific process. What makes me worry about that is whether or not that bright, young, promising statistician was given an adequate level of support and independence. Was he encouraged to delve into these data in the fullest level as an independent scientist that might, somebody who might discover things that were inconsistent with what was being reported? What were, you know, so when you asked, did you seek to get those data? Were you, was there resistance to do these analyses? Were you supported to do these analyses? It just, I worry that at least there is the possibility that this bright statistician would, in fact, not have, would be, as all of us would be in a junior stage, more vulnerable, and would not have had the support as an independent person to pursue these analyses that seemingly would be an important thing to do before June of 2010.
Now let me, or do you want to go ahead and make a comment first?
Well, actually, I'd kind of like to hear first from Bill, if I could, and then
I want you to hear from Bill, but I think you should, you know, go ahead and tell the other part that you wanted to make sure people didn't leave the room without knowing.
Conflict of interest. Okay. So we'll cover that ground too. But I do want to. There was an ancillary point that I was intending to make that I think drives us a little bit. So I came to Duke in 2007 as a first faculty appointment, and so the truth is that and my background was in genomics and discovery. So I stepped into a role with no direct personal experience in clinical trials. While I, you know, felt very confident in my statistical methods, I felt I understood the genomics data very, very clearly. I think in hindsight, I can certainly say that in some of the intricacies of clinical research, I was not prepared. But I would say that at the time when I joined, you know, there were PhD biostatisticians that the Clinical Genomics Studies Unit had partnered with in terms of the development of the trials. And so when I stepped in, I did step in both through those people and through my interactions with the cooperative group. You know, I think I was well surrounded by individuals with vastly more expertise in clinical research than I, that I could rely on. And I did rely on them, I would say, in a reactive fashion to when situations arose that I didn't feel like I could comfortably answer myself. The challenge there is not being able to be proactive to really understand, you know, what are the weak links of the research that is going on.
So if you could, looking back at your experience, if you could say, if this had been different, it surely would have facilitated my ability to contribute even sooner as a collaborative, independent scientist. What would you change? What would have helped you?
To be a part of a more active, cohesive group rather than as an individual relying on kind of network connections to my fellow faculty and to my other, the other research structures that I had available to me through the cooperative group, through the department, and those of us faculty biostatisticians who were doing cancer research. So that was one comment I wanted to make.
There was something you said, Rob, indicated that you wanted to tell us about.
And that's the third item. There is a second one that I want to revisit, and it was based on a question you had. But let me go.
Okay, we can come back to it.
Right. Okay. So first of all, I do want to make the committee know, you know, in terms of the conflict of interest that we talked about earlier. And it was brought up that there were a number of Duke investigators who had conflict. I am one of the 17 people who is conflicted or had been at some point conflicted with the research that was going on. So I do want to make the committee aware of what my role was. And as I said, I joined Duke in 2007. It was actually not until I did not have the conflicts I had were in terms of IP interest and also in terms of a personal consulting relationship that I had set up with the company in question, Cancer Guide. Those did not occur until 2009. In the winter, in the November of 2009, that was when I was approached by Dr. Nevins with the invention disclosure form as the mechanism by which you could disclose the IP interest, and I was offered a percent interest in terms of the research that had been done to define the prospective algorithms in which to apply genomic technology. So I was, I was approached by Dr. Nevins in terms of having that IP interest. However, as has been discussed and alluded to, that was the only contact I had, was in terms of being able to sign and request a copy of an invention disclosure form. So I was not aware of the arrangements that went past that point, but I did try and act upon those. And at the same time, that was at the same time that Cancer Guide, the members of Cancer Guide approached me about in a consulting arrangement to help in terms of establishing a informatic structure in terms of a server, that a high-performance computing server, in terms of the software that needed to be loaded onto it to apply these algorithms that had been programmed in various statistical softwares like R and MATLAB. And so I had set up a consulting arrangement, or was in the process of negotiating a consulting arrangement at the same time in the beginning of 2010. My actions, just to inform the committee of what my actions were, I'd like to welcome any questions that you would have about these relationships. But, at that time, I did seek guidance from my department chair about how to manage, what I needed to do to manage these relationships. I was directed by my department chair to the Dean of School of Medicine, who then also referred me to the Conflict of Interest Committee, and I began working with Ross McKinney to outline what a management plan would be for those circumstances.
Bill, department chair in means biostatistics?
Yes.
That department?
Yes. So, and that relates back to the earlier point, in terms of my sole appointment is in the Department of Biostatistics and Bioinformatics. So in terms of whom I report to, whom I saw the question in the, in terms of salary, And those aspects, it's really my department chair that is...
Can you just say a couple of words about what the department chairman thought in general was the right policy for this? And I'd be curious then if Tom or Dave thinks this is a conflict. I mean, this is a tough real-life situation. And you went through the plans and stuff, but what did they look like? And then do you or others have thoughts about if this is an issue?
I would say I was given... the go-ahead that, as long as being transparent and going through the right channels of establishing what a faculty could and couldn't do, that I was encouraged to pursue these relationships. It wasn't until, I would say, later when continued issues about the science were being raised, I think, did everyone kind of, and did I begin to get some advice from a mentoring standpoint about should a biostatistician really have IP interest in research that they're involved in. So, but at the time, I would say there wasn't that perspective.
And that was the policy, just disclosure would handle it.
That
at the time.
That was my perception. I don't want to speculate on other people's...
I think Ross will want to comment on this, but just from my perspective, we had a really good discussion about this last night. I've always seen the statistician as having a dual role as also sort of the final check on the quality of the work being done. And so I'm uncomfortable with that arrangement. But Bill did go to the department chair, and there was, I think Ross will comment on this, but we didn't really have a policy as it relates to statisticians. And it's an issue that I think does need to be addressed. If the statistician has a dual role, should there be another statistician asked to play that role?
Bill did come to us early when the question was raised about a consulting arrangement and intellectual property. He came with Liz. We had them both present at one of our conflict of interest committee meetings because we had not thought about the distinct role of a biostatistician in all the context of and decided that, in fact, it is such a distinct role that it really needs a distinct practice. So we put restrictions on biostatisticians that look very much like those of a PI. So they are not like other investigators. They are handled distinctly. And so there are caps on how much they can have before they aren't allowed to be the biostatistician on a project anymore. That
will probably continue. We also added a biostatistician to the Conflict of Interest Committee because we thought it was important to have those insights because we didn't have them originally.
Ross, the issue here is about money and equity or interest or whatever in a product that gets developed, and that's one conflict you just said you dealt with. What about the sort of larger one of this person's paying a substantial part of my salary and there's no sort of quid pro quo with, or, you know, it's not directly linked to a specific product, but is that a potential issue to manage there? It's your boss.
Is it real, and is it something that you manage through what we've done through traditional means? And the answer is there always will be in all research relationships like that, some conflict. You're trying to be collaborative partners with somebody. And it is a little bit different being the biostatistician. You've got to be, as Rob says, the person who can say, no, you can't go down that route. But I think it's always going to be the case that somebody pays people and there are expectations that come with that. It's too bad that we have people who are entirely on soft money who then become increasingly dependent and they need to have protection. Yeah. When they're in that setting, particularly if you're putting them in that kind of a role. And that is something to learn from this that I'm not sure that we've completely evolved yet.
Can I ask a point of clarification? When you put a cap, is it on the IP issue or the consulting issue or both?
It's a little bit on both, so I don't want to be mealy-mouthed or use weasel words, but the... we have a cap of $25,000, which is consistent with our PI cap on consulting. The intellectual property we look for and its potential for generating royalties, we look at each case separately and do our best to estimate what we think is likely to be the chance that it will exceed something that would affect people. So either go above 10,000 or go above 25. And we do our best to guess on the percentage of the royalty stream, not talking about percentage of the sales. We're talking about percentage of the royalty stream. What's the likelihood that it'll cross a threshold? And we do our best to guess. And those are very rough estimates.
Thank you. And if I could just... Two quick comments to wrap up this point. You know, I think in one of the lessons learned categories, one of the things I've had in conversation with Jeff in particular is it was not necessarily about conflict of interest. It was more focused in terms of the quality framework of the research being conducted. But I think it applies to conflict of interest too. And that would be in things like these genomic trials, where I would say there are two quantitative roles being done. First, the application of the genomic models and predictors, and then second to that, the association to clinical outcome. That those two roles really be separate and be separately done. So that is something that we've done within the framework of the trials. Here was really to try and spell that out to be done independently as a way of hopefully giving greater quality to the research that's going on, whether it's real or perceived conflicts. The second action is, I would just say, in terms of closing the conflict of interest, the only solution I've come to individually is I've divested myself of all IP interest, and I have no interest in having IP interest. But I'm not sure, I mean, that I don't feel that that's something that can be mandated across the board. That's my own personal feelings in reaction to this situation.
I have a question. During this process, did you feel, since you were so heavily funded by the Potty Nevin plan, did you ever feel uncomfortable or that you were encouraged to get the right answer?
No. So and that gets back to the earlier question that you had asked. You know, I would say, you know, I did a lot of work that I can talk about in more detail in terms of the preparatory work for these trials, in terms of working with the genomic signatures, trying to verify them in my own hands. I took a very open, you know, there were many active meetings among team members, PIs, and the members of CGSU, and I just flatly presented what I could see and tried to take a very empirical approach. So I personally did not feel pressured along those lines.
We need to move to another set of questions here, and time is running very short, but we did cut